I'm going to break it into several parts. I'm going to talk about identifying the problem. I'm going to talk about what we actually have as a community that we're not really taking advantage of. And then I'm going to talk about practical step-by-step what to do about it. Okay. First, by identifying the problem. This is where most people stop. They bitch about stuff. Oh, we just don't have any events. I don't know what's coming up. I can't trust anybody. This place is so shallow. Blah, blah, blah. We've all heard it. We've all done it. It has no power when you want to complain all the time. There's no value in it because there's no forwarding of the action. That's why I'm going to be talking about actually what you can do about it. What puts me in the position to talk about this is that down in San Diego, we're experimenting constantly. I have created many affinity groups in many different directions, car clubs, things like that. I've maintained them. I've handed them away. I've done all sorts of stuff. The old paradigm sucks. It's awful. It hasn't progressed in the age of the internet. We're in a totally different world now. What we're doing down in San Diego is we're using the internet as our bitch, not as the thing that drives us. The internet, when we only live online, is making us socially retarded. Yes. It's bad for us. It is toxic. Having 3,000 friends on Facebook is about as nourishing is about as nourishing as eating styrofoam. It's very filling, but not very nourishing. What we're starved for as primates, as anthropoids, is connection, is feeling like we're part of something larger than ourselves. We need to be tribal. That's why if you took some American goths, you know, young folks in the makeup and the hair and all that, and then magically transported them to downtown Tokyo, and they don't speak the language. As soon as they see a group of Japanese goths, oh boy, and they go with them and their needs are handled. It is wired into us as troop monkeys, as pack apes, to need that sense of being able to fall back and having people catch you because they want to, not because they have to, not because they're being paid to, but because their whole life is involved in wanting to be your support system and begging you to be the same for them. It is a natural, normal human tendency. It's what we were evolved for. In the age of the internet, we've gotten into a crisis point. There's two things that have broken us down. Okay, one, clearly I'm not that fond of living on the internet. I use the internet all the time myself. And there's some blessings involved, which I'll be talking about. But by far the most horrifying thing that none of us in this room have said is that we are wounded, all of us, by having lost so many people. And we need to just take a moment and acknowledge that, and then we'll move on. Because we have lost a major part of the cycle of mentoring. And it is a tragedy for all of us. And we could get deep into it, and we're not, because we could spend a lot of time crying. What happened in the old days is we had a cycling of mentoring between the generations. I was a very big beneficiary of that. I was an angry punk. I was pissed off. I'd been lied to. I'd been raised in a very Catholic household, and I did not believe anything anymore. And suddenly, all of these lies that I'd been told in my life, I didn't know what to replace it with. Suddenly, I thought I'd run with the fastest crowd I could find, and it just happened to be Gay Leatherman. I just happened to be a young guy, tall, I was going to the gym all the time, loved to fuck older guys. Well, you can tell my dance card was pretty damn full. But what they did for me was not just teach me sexuality. What they taught me was interpersonal dynamics, how to read signals so that I knew what people were really, really saying when they said something in a leather bar. The signals were not going past me. I learned the language of how to communicate through what we wear, how to be a good man in the community. I got a huge amount of mentoring from a bunch of wonderful guys. I owe them a huge karmic debt, and every one of them died. So we acknowledge that, yes. Okay, fine. Cutoff point. I refuse to brood about it. You know why? Because we've done it long enough. This is my message to the men that are not in this room. Okay, the men who are not in this room, I'm saying this to you personally. We need to get over it. Because those of us who are, like, say, in their 50s, 60s, us boomers, while we've been wallowing around in our pity pool, a whole new generation has risen up. And they need love, they need approval, they need respect, they need to know that they're on the right path. We are their grandfathers, we are their uncles, we're their daddies, we are their older brothers. And if we don't take ownership of them, our community is fucked badly, and that's what has been a major part of our problem. The cycle of continuity between the generations is broken. I'm dead set against TNG groups, the next generation, meaning young guys, separate. Anytime there's a TNG group in a city, it's a symptom that the older guys don't take ownership of these people's future, that they're not being kind to them, giving them extra helpings as uncles and daddies do, saying, I want you to succeed in this world so that you get to stand on your own 2 feet so that when we stand shoulder to shoulder, the generation after you can stand on our shoulders. That is our duty. I say this now clearly. It is our duty to reach out to the young guys. Why? What gives me the moral authority to say this? Because we're doing it in San Diego. We have a little over, right around 3,500 guys on my email list, up from zero 28 months ago. Approximately 70% of our newest members are under the age of 35. And they come running. And they don't just show up and look around and go, ew, you know, gross. They say, oh, thank God, and they stay. We have the highest proportion of young members of any club on earth by far. The reason why we've been able to do it is because I had to let go of my bigotry. And I admit it. I had the same mindset as all of us here, which is, well, these young guys, they're shallow. They're not interested in us. They think we're just hitting on them, that we're dirty old men, that we're trolls, blah, blah, blah. That's just noise. None of it makes any sense. You know why? Because the moment I let go of that and started treating anybody, any age, as someone with majesty, as someone with value to add, as somebody with idealism and energy and passion in their hearts, that's how they show up. See, imagine me going through a crowd, me personally. Nobody knows me if you can imagine such a thing. And I'm shoving my way through the crowd. Get the fuck out of my way, asshole. I'm going to get an asshole back. But if I treat someone as my favorite brother or my favorite sister right off the bat, with no expectation in return, I tend to see them rise to that expectation. That's what happens with our youth. They want to know us. They want what we have. The years that we've spent learning how to have successful relationships, how to interconnect with each other, how to build teams, how to have relationships that last, how to have amazing life with wonderful people in your, you know, in your circle. They're desperate for this. And they want to ask, but they don't even have the question. They don't even have the vocabulary to ask. It is our job to keep reaching out. So that's what I do. So I'm preaching and I'm going off on a tangent. But I want you to understand what the problem is. The real problem is we need all of us. We need the elders. We need the young, idealistic powerhouses that are, you know, want to grab the ball and run with it. And our job is to be with the pom-poms. Good for you. Good for you. Down in San Diego, we average around 20 events a month. I'm the head of the group. Do you see me working real hard? The hardest part for me is making sure that the newsletter has enough pictures to put in it. We have no dues. We have no bylaws. We have no expectations except one. And this is what everybody in the group hears the first moment that they join. It's part of the welcoming message and everything. We want every age, every color, every body style, every experience level. The only people that we actively and aggressively discriminate against is grumpy people. It seems nice. Giggle, giggle. That's cute. Well, I know how to be grumpy. Yeah, but you know how to leave it outside. We all know how to be. Yeah, we all know how to be evil, angry bitches. I'm human. You're human. But we also know how to leave it outside. We've had hundreds, and I'm not exaggerating. That's not hyperbole. Hundreds of events in San Diego in the last 28 months. We have not had problems. You know why? Not because somebody's saying, you fuckers better be good, but because the threshold is down so low that everybody gets relaxed, everybody gets respect, everybody gets treated like a nice guy. Everybody says, oh God, there's grown-ups here, I can relax. It's stressful and tiring to be bitter and cynical, and we're sick of it, and we're sick of being prejudged. Are you hung enough? Are you young enough? Are you good enough? How are your genetics? Are you A-list enough? We're so sick of it, but we never know when it's time to let go. What our group does, we just ring the bell saying you can let go of it. If you're a nice guy, we want you. But implicit in that, when I say all the only people we discriminate is grumpy people, hidden underneath that is a secondary communication. Somebody will be paying attention. And if you're not going to be, if you're going to be grumpy, you're going to get a timeout, but that's as far as we're going to do it. If any of us are going to expect redemption, we have to provide redemption for others. So I'm going to give a good example. I used to run an incredibly popular dance party. I didn't get paid for it. I just, it's my nature. I do that. But so in 2.5 years of hosting this, every Friday, 400, 600 guys every Friday, we only had one problem. One young guy, he was about 30 years old, and he was being a pill. He was pissy. He was yelling at the DJ. He was arguing with the bartenders. People were bringing him to my attention. I said, okay, I'll deal with it. And I went up to him, and I just hugged him. And while I'm holding him, I'm talking quietly in his ear. I said, I got a favor to ask you. He says, what's that? And I said, well, I know that you're kind of crabby. It's okay. You're having an off day. We all have it. I have those days too. I said, and as you well know, I take full responsibility for the safety and well-being of this space. And you're kind of harshing the vibe. So my request of you is you take it home. You take good care of yourself. You talk to friends. You have a good cry. Take a warm bath. Whatever works for you. When you come back next week, we'll make you feel extra welcome because you belong here and we want you here. Just not tonight. Okay, and he left. We came back, and I greeted him with open arms, and I meant it. And he kept coming back, and he never caused a problem again. The reason why I say this is because this is basic golden rule. We all know how it works. The problem is that we've been trivialized, as you had mentioned earlier, that we are being sexualized with no other resources. It's a killing message. If I'm on manhunt, there are no local community support things on manhunt. Show up and cruise or get the fuck off. They don't care about local community. They've strip-mined our bars. The bars have died or are dying, and they've left nothing behind except get laid, get laid, get laid. And when it's only one note, it starves us because each one of us is a symphony. But when we're treated as only one note, it is a very dehumanizing thing. I'm all about sex. I recommend it strongly, really. And there is a need in me to be able to cry with friends and have it be okay. To be able to be an asshole and then get forgiveness. To know that these are my friends for the next 40 years. That's really what we're heading towards. That's the goal in what I'm talking about. Where we can guarantee that it actually shows up that way every time. Every event. Not because people are being extra ferocious or extra pushy. Or are going into, you know, fighting stance. What did you mean by that? We get too much of that. How do we do it? Okay, I'm going to ask a very weird question to go into the next part. Let us pretend that you're at a bar. And suddenly, you notice that there's a straight guy that's wandered in. And he's throwing random punches. And he's clearly out of his mind on some drug. And he's not doing a very good job of it. But he's trying to punch people. And people throw him out. But then he sneaks back in and he starts doing it again. Show of hands. How many people here would do something about that? Raise your hand. Okay. It's easy to say that. Well, I want you to understand that not everybody has that nature. There's plenty of people that, like, they'd step back and it's just how they're wired. It's not good or bad. It's just what shows up. But people who take responsibility even when it's not their event are what I call traffic cops. I'll talk more about that. People who, by their nature, are responsible to the point where it's outside of their own safety circle, where they, you know, like where they want to take somebody from a burning car, even though it endangers their life. People who are like that have a stabilizing effect upon the larger community, and it's totally subconscious. Our group attracts two kinds of people, traffic cops, which I'll talk more about in a moment, and Boy Scouts. I'll talk more about that, too. These are my terms as I define them. Someone who is a traffic cop isn't aware that they are keeping an eye on things, but they are. While they're talking to somebody, they're just keeping an eye on the crowd. They're scoping out the circumstances, like any cop would. Even though they might be a computer programmer, even though they might be a dental hygienist or a florist, they're still doing it because that's how they're wired. They have a stabilizing effect upon the larger community. I'm going to bring up elephants in India. Okay, for millennia, people in India have been gathering wild elephants to do work for them. And the way they do it is they build these big wooden corrals out in the jungle, and then they stampede the elephants into the corral, and they slam door the gate. And the elephants are going crazy. They're freaking out, and they're goring each other, and it's just a mess. Or, as they learned, you take some tame elephants and make sure they're in there waiting for them. And the tame elephants are like, well, this is no big deal. And it calms everybody down. That's what traffic cops do. That's why our events attract well-socialized grown-ups. The name of our group is Fetishman San Diego, but it really should have been well-socialized grown-ups. people who have social graces, who have years of experience of learning how to get along with other people, and who want to be able to exercise that and always have it show up okay, rather than having people say, what the fuck did you just say to me when you said something from the heart? You know, we want to trust that what we say and do is actually going to resolve, I mean, going to resonate with people, and they're going to be on the same wavelength, and we're going to talk on the same level rather than talking past each other. Okay? Boy Scouts. People who are externally motivated, meaning that they want to do good in the community. They want to volunteer. They want to be joyful and get the party started. They want to get the conga line started at the wedding reception. People who are very giving people. The problem with very giving people is that they become targets for users and abusers. Oh, you feel like giving? I feel like taking. Give me, give me, give me. So they learn naturally. They have to learn self-protective behaviors. Otherwise, they're going to get eaten up alive in a world full of very cynical people. Well, what if instead we gather together hundreds and hundreds of Boy Scouts and traffic cops, and everybody's on the same wavelength? Okay, I'm going to give a very, very, very salient example. And this is not aimed at Palm Springs or at any other city. It just happened to happen in Palm Springs. I'm going to give you the exact polar opposite of everything I've been talking about, where the law of the jungle prevailed. About a year ago, a little over a year ago, here in Palm Springs, I went to the Mr. Toolshed contest. And it was a nightmare scenario. There were five guys, open hearts, giving, caring guys, and they were running for the title, and they wanted to do their 90-second speeches. But the people in the bar were not buying it. They were yelling and screaming. I saw somebody throwing shit. The MC was screaming, shut the fuck up, over and again, over and over again, and people were screaming back. And nobody could hear what any of these guys were saying, and it was a complete donkey derby. And I hated it, and I had to leave. I was so stressed, I wanted to punch somebody. Because there's a nature in me that makes me want to calm things down. I'm a border collie. It's what I do, calm things down, not so wild. Well, then, just a couple of months later, in San Diego, we had the Mr. San Diego Eagle Contest. It was not only, by far, the most people that ever showed up for that. It was like orders of magnitude beyond that. I could go on and on about how wonderful it was. But far more than the quantity was the quality. People were unified. Yes, they were joyful. They were chattering when it was time to chatter. They were happy and socializing. But when the MC said, it's time for everybody to be quiet, the place went quiet. If I dropped a pen, it would have been the loudest noise in the bar. Not because somebody said, you fuckers better be good, but because everybody arrived already aligned. They were already unified. How? Because in my newsletter, I put out a special bulletin, an email all by itself saying, special request about this upcoming event. People read that, and it says, here are the pictures of the five young men that are running for this title. They're doing it because they care deeply about community and they want to make the world a better place. Let's be there for them. Let's show them love. Let's show them that this is a true community that they can depend on. And they showed up. They really showed up. And what happened is that all these guys got was love. At no moment did they feel in peril of somebody throwing tomatoes or something. Even the drunken rowdies in the back who were not unified, who did not get the newsletter, who didn't get the memo, they were on their best behavior. Like, I'm not sure if I can cut loose in here. Because they could tell that if they made any noise, people are going to go, shh, because they were dedicated to the result. Frankly, that particular contest was a nasty mess behind the scenes in that the producer spent the whole time sleeping. None of the contestants knew what was going on. Nobody had assigned a den daddy. The MC was just bringing along by force of will, and everybody in the crowd was participating in any way they could, so that even when things veered off into the weeds, when the newly elected emperor stood up at the front of the room for 23 minutes talking about what a bitch it is to be a drag queen nowadays, totally disrupting, not his place, but he did it, and people were very polite. Nobody did the hook to pull him off the if there'd have been a producer, that would have happened. But people were unified to the point where they were willing to tolerate that, because they were dedicated to the final result. And it's like, okay, we'll wait for you, but move out of the way. But the point is that the difference between the two is not the location. It's not really the people. We have in it in all of us to be drunken rowdies, to be peevish, to be on it, to be feeling ill at ease and going into self-protective behaviors. The difference was that I'd made a request, and people honored that request. Doesn't mean that I'm Mr. Magic, I'm not Mr. God. But what I provided is my newsletter. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take a short pee break, and then I'm going to talk about the newsletter. This is something you guys need to be taking notes on, I promise you. You really, really do, because this is the single biggest asset in our community, yes, indeedy, is male intimacy. We all know what a dick looks like up close. We know how to get sex. We've been taught when we were younger is that was bad and it was wrong, so we got past that in order to get laid. But what we also learned without acknowledging it is being able to just drop the shields and be with each other in a big old naked pile like a bunch of puppies, and not have to have it mean a date, and not have to have it mean that we're committed to anything except that we like each other because we're all in the same boat. That intimacy is crucial for all of us. There's a big difference between sexual intercourse and social intercourse, in the sense that if we break it into two parts where there's, you know, getting your nut off over there, but then there's the hunger, the skin hunger of wanting hugs, of wanting to be able to be close with somebody. That is probably the biggest thing that we do in our group, is we make it okay to be fully self-expressed in a physical way with each other. If you look at pictures from our photos, no, pass the photos around so everybody can go flipping through them as time goes by. But you'll notice everybody's touching. Not as in grabbing each other's dicks and asses, but as in, I like you. Because we're communicating on two levels. Yes, we're using words, but we're also using approval through the form of touch. And we need that. You heard that old phrase, you know, you need a minimum of 7 hugs a day just for maintenance. You know, it's an old phrase. But there's a lot to that. That what if what we really desperately need is to know that we're okay, no matter who we are, as we are, now. Not someday when we get a bigger dick, or better genetics, or whatever is trendy at the moment. What if there's majesty in all of us, and there always was? What if there is worth underneath it? What if the thing that makes you different from me is not a problem, but actually your superpower? What if the thing that made you wrong when you were a kid, that people picked on you for, is now actually what the world wants more from you? What if that possibility was always there? And the only way we're going to know that is if we have friends who will tell us. Say, God, I love that about you. Really? Why? And they'll tell you that celebrating that which makes each one of us special now. Because we're all sick of being judged on stupid shit. Are you hung enough? Are you young enough? Are you A-list enough? Are you good enough? And it's a killing message that if you don't look like those models in that magazine, why are you infesting the wrong planet? What's wrong with you? Are you worthy of desire? I don't think so. They are. When it looks like the only people who are really having a really rocking good time are the guys who are on a downward death spiral. Drugs, 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 party, party, party. It's a shitty role model, but it's very pervasive. Well, how about we just do something else? How about we start something for nice guys, for well-socialized guys, for a lot of couples in there because they like it, because it's not a crotch club. We all know how to get sex. It's over there. There it is. Go get it. But in the meantime, we're going to be over here finding reasons to love each other and accept each other and actually get to know each other, really, and find out all those little flaws that we're all terrified that people are going to figure out about us and still have it be okay. That's a really good goal. So how do we get there? I'm now going to talk about the practical aspects. One of the things, Bob, why don't you get out your phone? Why don't you bring up the webpage? What we have is a very simple web page. It's designed to fit on phone screen, on Android or iPhone. And these guys have it, you know. Several people have it. So that if you're in a bar and someone says, God, I wish I knew what the hell was going on, somebody whips out their phone, they hit an icon, looks like an app, but it's actually just a bookmark, brings them to the page, they tap, they say, here, put in your email. Boom, they're on the email list. That's how we got 3,500 guys in 28 months. Because we live in a highly distractible culture. We got shit flying at us from every direction. I'm a priority, text message. I'm a priority, tweet. Over and over again, to the point where when everything's a priority, nothing is a priority. because it's noise coming at us from so many different directions, and we get burned out. The surface of our brains becomes sandpapered smooth, and I think we all know what I'm talking about. How do we deal with that? We deal with it by distracting people, but very effectively. The web app, when I say, oh, let me get you on the list, first I show them pictures, and we'll talk more about the pictures, and then I say, why don't you get on the list? Okay, that's the power of the internet, but not in a way that separates it. It brings us together. I would say we get usually an average of between 5 and 8 new members a day. On weekends, it goes up. We'll get like 30 a day. Why? Are they all in San Diego? No, they're not. They're trying to figure out what we're doing. The reason why I go on and on in my newsletter, is so that people in other cities can follow my breadcrumbs. They can see what's going on. So that they say, you know, they're doing it successfully in San Diego. We could do something like that, couldn't we? That's my goal. I have an agenda. But the reason why we do this is because if I'm talking to somebody in a bar and then I hand them a card, you know what'll happen to that card? Nothing will happen. Because they're going to empty out their pockets. They're going to get a stack of cards, and then sooner or later it's going to fall behind the desk. And then sooner or later they'll find this thing covered in dog hair and dust and say, I don't know what the hell that was, and nothing happens. When I tried, you know, I tried using the old paradigms in the modern age, and they fail. If I try and hand out flyers, same thing. Yeah, I'll do something about that. And then, oh, squirrel, you know. And then nothing happens. Out of every 500 pieces of dead tree technology I would use, one response. Not a good turnaround. Versus if I distract somebody for 2 minutes solid, I say, look at these pictures from our events. They go, oh, my God. And they zoom in. They say, oh, there's Dougie. Oh, there's Fred. Oh, my God, you guys, where was this? And that adds relevance to what I'm saying to them, saying, come be a part of a brotherhood. And they go, well, these guys look happy. You can't Photoshop happy into a picture. Either it's there or it isn't. That's why I document things. That's why I document every get-together so that it provides rock-solid proof that things work. It's too easy to gather evidence that life doesn't work, that friends will betray us, that we'll all die alone. There's no strength in that. I gather evidence to the opposite, that things do work, that people can be intimate and have it be okay without having to pull back a bloody stump, that we can have friendships that last and last and last, even with all of our flaws, that we're not going to die alone, that we don't have to live in the tragedies of the past, that these are the good old days that we're building now. Okay. So how do we do this? Again, distracting people by getting them on the list. Second, credibility. We're going to talk about that. Credibility is the new currency. Everybody thinks that money is important. I vote for money. But credibility is far more precious. You can't buy credibility with any amount of money. So how do you earn credibility? By being a man of your word. By living in integrity. Not like you got a stick up your ass, but because this is who you are. And who you were born to be. You're a full-grown adult. You don't have mom saying, you better be good. You're a full-grown adult. You're making decisions in your own life. And when you stand a little bit taller and puff your chest out a little bit more because people say, God, I admire you so much. That gives you agreement that being a good man, capital G, capital M, is the thing to be. I'm going to tell you about the problem with men. Men are a fucking problem. We're rapists. We're torturers. We're warriors. We're pedophiles. We're all these terrible things. We're a problem. We are walking hazards. I assert that any man in this room, if you were to walk up to a 3-year-old that you didn't know and start talking to them, within 15 seconds there would be a female in between you and that child, because you are a problem. It's a toxic, horrifying message that no man can be trusted. Well, I gather evidence to the opposite, that when we are at our best, we're excellent decision makers, role models, mentors, leaders, and just protectors. Thank you. That's what I call the good man. We celebrate the good man. We're not isolated little vapor particles. We are cohesive when we choose to be. We can be brothers forever and have others who want to be like us. I assert that because we do that. It's happening. And it comes through the power of our word. when I'm doing stuff with the club, you know what I'm doing? I'm not working. I'm giving my word. I say, this thing is coming up. This is why I liked it last year. Here's some pictures from before. And if you go to this, this is an interesting event because a lot of people come out who never come out. And these are the kind of guys you really want to know. They don't come out very often, but they are solid gold. And you know what happens? Everybody shows up expecting that, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because people say, that's what I want. I endorse that. When we have events, we don't have 3,500 people show up. Each event is different. It's a different location. Not all of them are in bars. Some of them are in other things. But the people that show up are absolutely dedicated to making sure that what I promised is going to come true. Because they endorse it. True leadership does not come from being bossy. From saying, you guys need to do this. You know, the top-down approach, it doesn't work anymore. True leadership comes from having a powerful dream. Where is he? Jim? Hmm. Oh, there you are. Sorry, you moved. Yeah. Shouldn't do that. You tricked me. I'm old and easily fooled. No. This man here, I'm going to point at him right here. I want everybody to notice this man right here. Last week, for the first time in many years, Leather was back at Gay Pride here in town. He had a powerful dream, and better than that, he enrolled a team, and that team, on the first day, they had a fucked up time because nobody was there. They were ready to go. They were like, okay, I'm doing this. I'm doing like a crouch, and I'm looking this side and that. These guys were so dedicated to the result that there was nothing that could distract them, even though there was nothing to protect in the tent. The guy who was assigned to protect the tent and make sure nobody walked off with anything, it was like every time I'd get in his field of view, he'd move out of the way so he could keep an eye on the tent. He was doing it like with every fiber in his soul, and I made sure that I noticed and that he got pointed out. Because my role as a grandpa for the community, which I own, of being a patriarch, that's a bad word. I'll tell you why in a moment. But the reason why I do it, by going up to people like him and his volunteers and saying, thank you. What you're doing matters. This is important. What you're doing is making a difference. And then the next day, my message was, look at this. Own it. Look at how successful. This, just from a simple giving your word, this happened. And it's going to get easier and easier each year because more and more people are going to want to be the wind beneath your wings. You're a visionary and you're a leader. So thank you. And that's how it works, because there's plenty of Boy Scouts out there. Their job is to do stuff and volunteer and to help. The problem with volunteers is they may not consciously be doing it for a thank you, but they're sure as hell not doing it for a fuck you. And a lot of times that's what they get, because people discount them, they ignore them. The guy who volunteered to keep an eye on the stuff for the silent auction, who was there for 4.5 hours without a pee break because nobody thought of him, very unlikely to come back next year. But if their needs are being handled, if people know that this is important, that this person is a powerful champion for our community and we should thank him, he's a lot more likely to come back. He's more likely to wag his tail real hard and run out and do more for us. But if we don't do that, they will be lost to us. And that's what happens normally. We don't give each other the love and respect. The biggest deficit we have is respect. That's why people go into bitchy, infighting, backbiting, circular firing squad shit, because they feel disrespected, because it's a philosophy of scarcity. See, if I have a piece of pie, and I'm really certain that there's no more pie out there, and I better protect what I got, otherwise some fucker's going to take it away from me, and that means less, okay? It's a very Republican thing to say. Sorry if I'm stepping on anybody's mug. I'm a hyper-bedwetting liberal. My philosophy is let's make the pie really big so everybody gets lots of it. Where there's enough respect for everybody, there's enough love for everybody, that everyone has a place, that everyone has value, that if we just let them be that fully self-expressed person, then magic can happen. I'm open to that possibility. Yeah, I talk like this all the time. But the reason why I say it is because it works. Because we don't have things break out into flames in our events. We don't have factions hissing and spitting. Why? I mean, good God, you got all these opinionated people with egos the size of Montana. What the hell? But if they're getting their goodies, if they're feeling like they have a place in the world, if they're feeling like they are trusted, then they're going to settle down, just like all of us would. We don't need more Tom of Finland stereotypes. We have plenty of those. What we need is men who are admired because they're admirable, loved because they're lovable, and respected because you're respectable. That's crucial. In the old paradigm, whoever had the most A-list ways got to be A-list, and then everybody else was sort of infesting the place. Well, the new paradigm is the more fully self-expressed you are, the more authentic you are, and the kinder you are. Those are things that are attainable by anybody of any age. And that's what it used to be like in my very happy golden memories of the old days, that it was based upon mutual trust and respect and earned respect. We talk about trust, honor, and respect, but those are good words. But in order to live it, you have to really kind of live it. You have to let go of the petty shit, all the noise in our heads that says, wait a second, what did you mean by that? Let's just start with a policy of pre-forgiveness. That if I say something that offends you, it's not because I want to offend you, it's because I tried to make a joke and I really did a shitty job of it. Please forgive me. There's nothing in me that wants to hurt you. There's no weapons in my hands. Let's start from that. And that's what we do. And that's what I'm urging everybody to start absorbing into their philosophy as a community. That we start from there. Do you have any idea how attractive that is to 22-year-olds? If they were in this room, 22-year-olds would say, oh, God, I'm right where I belong. Oh, please, oh, please, oh, please. You know what happens to the 22-year-olds and the 26-year-olds in our club? They get laid a lot. Because they're so hungry for community that they're like, I don't want to flirt with strangers anymore. I like that guy. I like how he talks. I like what I've been hearing from him. I'm throwing myself at him butt first. We're getting a lot of that. People are getting wildly laid, and I vote for that. That's a good thing. God bless you. I told him, I said, make me some pretty babies. You know, your mother and I want to see some grandchildren. Well, the point is that people feel a lot more joyful. They feel more... Yeah, really. Yes, is that what it sounds like? Yeah. But see, what we starve for, and I'm going to say this very clearly, and what we have a lot of in San Diego, are the endorphins of communal joy. What if everybody shows up and everybody's on the same wavelength and it just builds from there? What if everybody hands things off to each other? And I'll talk more about that. What happened at our last belt party? I don't know why they call it belt, but the belt party started out as something that was very top-down. You know, it was going to be, there's a producer, there's a hot DJ, there's go-go dancers that have been hired. They've hired the dance hall. But then they came to me and they said, a year ago, and they said, oh, please, can we involve the community? And it went nuclear. And I'm not exaggerating. That sounds really fancy. But what happened is that it turned from a level 2 event, which I'll explain shortly, into a level 3 event. I'm going to pause for a second, sidebar. I'm going to talk about the 3 levels of events as I describe them. This is my definition. Nobody else says this. Maybe you guys will take it on. Level 1 event is what I call a single social circle event. You see a lot of them. Somebody says, you know, I really think that we should start a group for HIV-positive bicyclists. We're going to have this event. So you put it on Facebook, and, you know, you tell your friends, and X number of people show up. But what's missing is that there's a whole bunch of people that could have been there, but they didn't know about it because Facebook is nothing but distractions. And you can't find that stuff unless you actively dig as hard as you can to try and find it. So you have a certain level of success, but no more. Some people are happy with that. Some people are disappointed that they only had 5 people show up at their fundraiser. Their hearts are broken. They drop away, and they are lost to us. It's happened way too much. Level 2 event is what I call a top-down commercial event. Let's talk about the pink party, okay? If there is such a thing, I'm just talking. But let's say I'm a producer and I want to create the pink party. It's going to be a hot, hot party. And so then I hire the hall, I get the dancers, I make sure that there's ambulances out in front in case there's any overdoses. I got it all covered. And what is the problem with this is that they don't give a shit how you do. There is no commitment to your well-being or success. There is no host, okay? And unless you show up with a protective coating of close friends to make sure that you have fun, you won't have fun. Because if you're there by yourself, you're not going to break in. You're not going to get past their indifference. The opposite of hate, of love, is not hate. It's indifference. And there's too much of it, okay? Where sink or swim, it's your fault. Either way, you know, whatever. It's your responsibility. I can't be bothered. It's not a good place to be. In San Diego, every one of our events are what I call level 3 events. This is where we use the power of the internet. It is crowdsourced wisdom. Everybody brings their A game because everybody's on the same wavelength. Everybody knows that we're going to play. We're going to dance. We're going to invite new people. Okay. How does this show up? Well, every week we have our men's discussions. I'll talk more about those. But at the beginning, an hour before the official start, is the pre-meeting, where all we talk about is what's coming up and what we want to do about it. And we've all gotten so comfortable with each other. This team of very loose people, some come in, some go out, some show up, some don't. It changes with each circumstance. But everybody knows what the game is, that we're going to be affectionate, we're going to be brothers, we're going to have a great time, and whatever happens, we're going to hand it off to each other like a team. And so then what happens is that at our last such party, well, at the previous such party, we had 36 guys, full three dozen, average age 28, whose job was to be community representatives. What the hell does that mean? Community representative means that they had name tags that said Community Representative Sean or whatever their name was. Well, their job was to enjoy the party, frolic, you know, be a nice guy. But if they saw someone standing off to the side looking lonely, unsure of himself, and out of place, their job was to go up to that individual, welcome them, get them introduced around, and get them into the swarm. No lonely people allowed. That's a very powerful thing. And it works. Because what happens is that it's like a froth, a bubbling froth of social circles. That guy who was lonely, who got brought in, and then and half an hour later is shirtless, dancing in the middle of the dance floor, sweating like a pig, grinning like an ape, and dancing 4 feet off the ground because he's high on the endorphins of communal joy, just like everyone around him, is going to tell his friends. And that's what happens. Because it's different. It's not the normal thing. It's not the usual lack of esteem and regard that we normally deal with, where everybody has something to contribute, because then everybody has a stake in the success of every event. Everyone feels ownership of it. They feel like, I did that, because it's glorious. You look at the pictures, you go, oh my God, this is so great. And people who have never seen such a thing before, they don't even have the vocabulary to describe what's in these pictures that I'll be handing around, but they say, I don't know what it is, but I want it. But see, it doesn't have to be work. In the old affinity group club idea, that doesn't work anymore. There's bylaws, there's dues, there's membership committees, there's all this other stuff, and it doesn't work anymore because we've got too many distractions. We don't do printed out newsletters anymore and staple them at 2 o'clock in the morning and lick stamps to put them on there in order to get them out in time for the deadline. We don't do that anymore. All that I do for me personally, for the group, is I have an email list that everybody has the power to add people to through this little web page. Everybody. Any kind of phone. So then they add them and they keep coming in. My job is to make sure that they get the welcoming message. The welcoming message gives the basic rules of decorum of our group. They're very easy. Be nice. If you don't like hugs, you're not going to like us. You know, if you think that people being sweet with each other creep you out, you're not going to like us. If you're looking to have lots and lots of wild, faceless sex, you can find that elsewhere. That's not what we're dispensing. We don't do that. So don't get your hopes up. What we do instead is create the possibility of brotherhood. And everybody gets into it at their own comfort level and at their own speed, and it gets better. How do we do that? With our Wednesday, every Wednesday, men's discussions. The men's discussions are a landing strip for new people because they're shy. They're worried that they're going to be treated shabbily like they were before at some other place. They've got noise in their heads from past encounters. They've got fears, some of them, because they've gone from they're now at the point in their lives where they've gone from wearing leather to living leather. And they're afraid because of, you know, all the pirate movie stereotypes of flogging. Beat them bloody! And then they find out it's something that's not really that way. But they've got these fears. In order for them to get past that, there has to be a gentle landing space for them, where all we do is we talk about substantive things every week. This last week, we talked about the distinction between submissive and being in service. What we do is we talk about things that are the opposite of bar chatter. Who's fucking who? When's the next party? Where do you get the drugs? We talk instead about how to deal with unwelcome attention without being a jerk. how to deal with being overly potty trained as a highly religious person and you're sick of it. You know, way too Mormonized or way too Catholic or whatever. And we talk about stuff like that. Young guy, 20 years old, says, I'm about to get fucked for the first time on Saturday. Does anybody have any advice for me? I dare say we'd all have some advice for him. See, the problem is that somehow or another, people keep hoping that that guy with the t-shirt that says mentor on the front of it is going to show up and we could wait forever for that to happen. Instead, what if we are that guy? What if we all have something to share? What if the things that we've learned without being conscious about it actually have value to someone else who's dying to learn those things and who could use a little leg up on being a better man? And by all of it, I mean, at the end of every one of our men's discussions, somebody will come up to me and say, God, I learned a lot of new stuff today. And I think you did. Because as an older guy, I take a lot of the stuff for granted. Like, well, yeah, it's kind of like being praised for breathing. I mean, it's just what we do. But to these guys, this is news. And what I assert to the older gentlemen in this room and to the older gentlemen that are listening to this, you are worth your weight in diamonds and rubies. The wisdom that you have gained the hard way is your greatest treasure. But if you've internalized that killer message that unless you're 23, then you have no value, if you've internalized the idea that there is no place for us in the world, we need to stop that. It's time to let go of that. It's harming us and always has. I ask guys, I say, when was the last time you heard somebody say, we need more middle-aged gay men around here? You don't hear that.
We hear it every day at Palm Springs.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, really. Thank you. All right. You get the idea. There you go. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for sharing. But what if the things that we take for granted are the things that people starve for? And that's what I find in our group, is that the new guys, not just the young guys, but the new guys, the married guy that finally came out to himself at age 60, and he's ready to make up for lost time, but he wants to understand what the hell the culture is about. Well, the way he's doing it is by showing up to each of our events and going, oh, this is damn good, you know. And so then by having the men's discussions, it also provides an opportunity for people to bond deeply, deeply, deeply. We've only been doing them since December of last year. It's 11 months. But if you were to go and go to any of our men's discussions, you would swear these people have known each other 20 years. They have such a level of trust, such a level of comfort and ease. It takes dynamite to get people to sit their asses down during the break, after the break, because they want to talk. They're so happy. There's gaiety in the room. In a big way, in the best way. There's people just yodeling with joy. They're so happy to see each other. You know, like the TV series Cheers, when people say, Norm! Well, everybody gets that. And I tell the new people, I say, you have just as much right to happiness as they do. Just keep coming. I said, your first time, you're going to be shy. That's normal. That is absolutely as it should be. It is normal, healthy self, you know, protectiveness to make sure that you're going to, you know, land properly in a group where you don't know the rules. I said, but what you're also going to do today, you know, I tell them this before, I say, what you're going to do is you're going to use your bullshit detectors to see if people are being authentic. And my promise is you'll find out we are, that nobody's going to be hiding behind anything. Nobody's going to be putting any shoulds on anybody else. Nobody's going to be putting on their favorite suit of armor and expecting the people to take them at face value. What they're going to do instead is they're going to say, you know, I like these guys. I think I could fit in. I wonder how I can make them like me. And I tell them, the way you do that, start getting sassy. Be more fully self-expressed. Take a few risks. See what happens. And I promise, you'll land on soft cushions and not broken glass. You'll be treated well. You will never be treated shabbily. You have my word of honor. And see what I did at our last big men's discussion. I said, okay, show of hands. How many people here have ever been treated shabbily at any of our events? Zero hands go up. The reason why that's important is because that is what we need to start from. We need to start from actually being good to each other. Always. And leaving the negativity and the pettiness and the old history in the past. There are people in our group who were, 10, 12 years ago, were the worst troublemakers. And believe me, I know. They have not caused a single bit of trouble in the last 28 months that we've had Fetishman San Diego. People who used to constantly pull shit just to get attention They don't do it anymore because now they're getting the attention they want without having to act out for it. It's very important. I want you guys to really take this seriously. It works. Not because I'm Mr. God. I'll get to it in just a moment. Not because I'm going around saying you guys better behave, but because nobody wants to pee in the pool or poop in the punch bowl because it would fuck things up. And they're getting what they need. Why would they want to mess with that? Please.
I'm just curious on these Wednesday meetings.
Yes.
Sort of like the format is in a circle. How many
yes.
people are in the average show up?
Yeah. I will describe it now. Thank you. We have it at above Pleasures and Treasures. Right now, Gear is getting ready to massively remodel, specifically to do the same thing, to have a meeting space. That's what Mr. S. Leather has now, is a meeting space. It's the new thing. It brings in business with people come in and say, oh, while I'm here, I should pick up another cock ring or whatever. So that's good for their business. But far more than that, it is ridiculously safe space because you can show up and you can do things in that meeting space that they won't allow you to do at the gay center. You can dress the way you want to, and people aren't going to say, that's not appropriate, go cover yourself. Say, oh, come on in. You know, let's see more of that. It's really good because on a typical Wednesday night, what we will do is there'll be about 30 guys. About three of them will be new, three or four. A lot of us old hands. But instead of those new people bouncing off of our indifference and being lost to us, everybody's nice to them. They're treated the same as everybody else. We do an invitation with them. We say, would you like to share? And if they say, oh, actually, no, I say, that's fine. Invitations can be accepted, declined, or renegotiated. We have to be okay with whatever the result is. We're not going to arm twist people because they need to get comfortable enough to then start swinging for the high fences. Okay? They may never do that, but we want to make sure the invitation is there. What I'll do is I'll start out the way that I did with this. I'll say, please introduce yourself and say something that is salient to what we're about to talk about. Okay, we recently had a hands-on session. Okay, this was flogging all levels. How many people were there? Yep, Robert?
Here
he is back there. Okay. It was tremendous. No surprise. Everybody was endorphinated like a motherfucker. What I did is that I had everybody go around the room, say their name, what's their experience level, what's their interest level. And so then when we're done with that, I did a short demo of different technique. And I said, okay, bottom's over here, top's over here, looky-loos over here. There were about seven looky-loos. They had their concerns, they had their considerations. That's fine. I'm okay with that. By the end of the evening, there were no more looky-loos. Everybody said, okay, I'm ready now. And they just dove right in because all they saw was joy all around them. They said, okay, if he can do it, I guess I can too. Nobody wanted to leave. We had about 45 guys for that one. And it was just an explosion of uncontrollable joy. Yes, everybody was endorphinated from the flogging, but more than that, they were bonding much tighter than usual. Like this was intimacy on a new level, rather than just politely talking on a deeply intellectual level. This is where the rubber hits the road, metaphorically speaking. And these guys are saying, more, please. So next month we're doing paddling all levels. We're going to keep doing this, where it's an invitation that people really like. The young guys go, oh, this is intense. The old guys say, oh, my God, I haven't had it like this in a long time. And everybody wins. About 8 o'clock, we started 6 o'clock for talking about what's coming up and making plans together. 7 o'clock begins the men's discussion. Okay. There's no gun to anybody's head to go to either one of them. People show up as they're dedicated. Then at 8 o'clock or so, we have a 10-minute pee break, and then we go back into the next port. If I'm the moderator, it's always open discussion. That's my comfort level. It's random. It's out of control. I like that because I like to see what shows up because I can keep saying, okay, this week the topic is this. The problem is it's dry for me. So we have one of those each month where it's absolutely a concise topic. And we stay rigorously close to that topic. We have a really good moderator for it, and it ain't me because I don't do that. What I do is I say that our last one, I said, please introduce yourself and say any questions, any concerns, any thoughts that are occurring to you that you need to bring to this crowd. Most people, the vast majority of them, say, oh, no. I said, okay, that's fine. Next. And so then, but the three people who had something to say were passionate about those things. And suddenly those guys who said, I don't know, all of a sudden they had something to say about it. Well, hang on. And my job as moderator is to make sure that nobody tripped over each other and that it moved along. But when I could tell that a topic was getting kind of dry, then, we'd kind of chewed it to death, then I'd say, okay, now we're going to shift over to this guy's topic. And then I'd say, tell us more about this. And I'd sort of interview him. And then he'd talk about the stuff that was on his mind. And he just, you know, we went way into that. And I said, okay, it's time for a break. After the break, we're going to talk about this. And maybe two people left during the break. What we do just before the break is we hand around a big plastic jug that is a donation for the use of the space. It's entirely optional. There is no actual cost. If you're broken, you never pay. Nobody cares. Nobody pays attention. We're more interested in saying thank you in a tangible way to the folks who are hosting the space, because then we don't have to worry about going to the center. When we used to have things like this at the center would forbid us to do stuff. They didn't trust us. They would say, you're not allowed to make flyers and hand them out, because what if someone drops one and a child finds it? Yeah, that's the sort of shit. Okay, what I just did is I passed around just one picture. I have around 300 pictures that aren't that much different in terms of intent and content, in terms of the fact that it's joyful. What I want to bring you guys' attention to is you guys did not come back from that break. You know why? Because you were happy. I couldn't be happier about that. That's not me being unhappy about it. This is how we are when we are at our best, when joy just is the main thing and the only thing, and you become spoiled. You want it every time. Gimme. I want that. It's a natural high that has no downside. Why wouldn't we want more joy for all of us? Why would we be stingy about the joy? The reason why I say this is because you guys just got a big taste of it. Why not do it every time? It's that easy. You have unified intentions. You're here because you care. You got a fire in your belly that makes you want to do more than just what's comfortable for you. I'm going to talk about circles of responsibility. See, if I'm a sociopath and I only care about me and I don't give a shit about anybody else, that's a really small circle of responsibility. If I only give a shit about me and my boy, that's slightly larger. If I only give a shit about me and my posse, that's another circle, slightly larger. What if there's a whole bunch of us who take responsibility for an entire community? Even though there's no payoff, there's no money in it, certainly doesn't get you laid more, doesn't get you paid more, why on earth would any idiot want to do that? Because of what you just felt during that break. I was admiring it the whole time, but I want you guys to be conscious, clearly conscious of what you were doing. You wanted to be close. You were chattering. You were jabbering away, and it couldn't have been better. I felt bad making you stop, but, you know, we got to stick to the program here. But the point is, after this, you guys aren't going to want to leave. You know, how do I know? Because that's what happens every Wednesday at our men's discussions. That's what happens every time we have a dance party. That's what happens every time we have a social event, when we have the cigars and boots event, when we have all these other things that are showing up on the website. We're going to be passing around the website shortly. I want you to be very clear that what you're going to be looking at on this website, on that iPad, once it charges a bit more, is rock-solid evidence that in San Diego, we got shit going on. We're not doing it to make other people in other cities feel bad. We're saying, come do this too. It's this easy. We're not working hard. Yes, every Wednesday I got to put out the newsletter. It's a little tedious because while I'm trying to do the newsletter, I've also got all those emails coming in and clients calling and all this shit, and it's very distracting and it's tiring. But that's the hardest thing. We don't spend any money. We're not money-based. Our events don't charge. We don't have to rent meeting halls. You know why? Because there's so fucking many of us now that every business in town saying, please, use our space. We're letting them do what they do well, which is to host things, you know, have a space. They don't charge us for it because we bring in people who then contribute either, you know, at the door or, you know, at the bar or whatever. But we don't have a group bank. We don't have checks to write. We don't spend any money. How do we do it? Because we're using modern media. We're putting out a newsletter. I mean, it cost me like, I don't know, some ridiculously small amount to set up the domain name. I admit that. Yes, I paid to have the banner made. Woohoo. But we don't have to pay for colorful cards that people are going to throw away. We don't have to pay for, you know, anything, because we don't do the inventory thing. The strength in our group is the kindness and strength of our souls. People who give a damn and are proud of that and make no apology for giving a damn. Men of good character. There's a lot of us. There's a lot more than you realize. Much, much more. We're getting flooded with them. The reason why we're not breaking apart into fractions and splinters is we're not a top-down group. You'd think we are. We're not. Because when we have around 20 events a month, we'll have somebody who's what I call the go-to guy, the guy who's the young new guy who's in charge of the Red Hanky subgroup in town. We're sort of umbrella helping them with love and publicity so they don't have to start from zero. What I do with my newsletter is I elevate people in the public eye. I have gained huge amounts of credibility with a capital C by always keeping my word. Every week I do a newsletter, even when I don't feel like it, but I put it out there. That causes me to stand out in a world full of internet flakes. That means that people take me seriously. You may have heard my name before. I am considered to be a man of integrity. I'm not anybody's plaster saint, I'll say that first, but I do keep my word. Well, what I do with all that credibility in the bank is I hand it away with both hands. When this young man says to me on Tuesday morning, he says, I would really love to have a gear dinner, someplace that's not a leather place. I want the public to see us. I want us to represent what it's like. I said, why don't you write it up and send it to me, and also send me a photo. Okay, so he sent it, and then I said, okay, if you're going to be doing this, and I called him back, I said, if you're going to do this, do not sit by yourself talking to a few people that are sitting near you. I said, these people that are going to be coming are looking for you to be a leader. They want to endorse your dream, and they want you to let them, and they want you to acknowledge that they've come and that you want them back. So, oh, okay. I said, you're being a leader. I am? Okay, I guess I am. Well, so then this young man did it with all his heart. He made sure everybody felt welcome. He was circulating. What I did as a manipulative old grandpa that I am is that every once in a while I would go behind him when he wasn't talking to anybody. I'd put my arm across his chest from behind. I'm tall enough. And I would very quietly talk in his ear. I said, look around you. This is your support system. These are the people that care about you, that want you to succeed. They're not here because they're hungry. They could eat anywhere. They're here because they believe in the power of your dream. Thank you for doing it. Give yourself the win. I said, make sure that these people know that you believe in what, you know, they're signifying, that they're there to make sure that you do well. And he did that. And so then, you know, I did those kind of communications because I'm a kindly grandpa and I know a few things about it. It was me making sure that he could hit. My job is to move the trees out of the way so that someone like him hits the ground running and doesn't hit any trees. That's my job. I'm not there with football trying to move it through traffic. You know, I'm the guy, he's the guy doing that. But I'm making sure that he wins so that he feels like, he told me, I want to do this again. But what else I did is that I posted a picture of him in the publicity and saying, this is an admirable man. I like him. And everybody said, well, Papa Tony likes him. He's okay with me too. And he didn't have to work hard climbing up an ice wall to try and get credibility. You know, he got it without having to be, he got a boost. Because that's what we do. We lend credibility to each other. We vouch for each other's good name. We take care of each other because we want each other to succeed. Chimpanzees do that. You know, it's what we're born to do. But it broke apart when we became hypersexualized as the only way that we could relate to each other. There's a lot more to me than that. And I want people to know that. And I want to know what's in everyone else, too. Because that's what we were evolved for over millions of years. It broke down when everybody started dying so much. We were hit the earliest and hit the hardest as a community. And yes, it was bad. Then the internet vaporized us. We're a bunch of satellites instead of a solar system. Well, now we don't have to be anymore. That's my message to you. The reason why our events are so numerous and so popular is not because of me pushing the parade float while everybody else dances and waves on top of the parade float. That's what kills people in organizations. That's why old-style affinity groups don't work. You burn out. So instead, this is crowdsourced, where everybody brings their best game, so that if somebody loves hosting men's discussions, God bless you. Please do. Okay?
We were just talking about that on the break.
Yeah. If someone says,
find people with niches,
yeah. If someone is the visionary who can see the golden city on the hill that nobody else can see, I assert that this man right here has what we call astronaut's perspective. He looks at larger patterns and he says, you know, this could really work. That's why we should look to him for dreams. Because in order for us to move to the next thing, we need to see what goes further. Many people can't see beyond the ends of their own noses. It's a form of blindness. It doesn't mean that they're wrong. It just means that's how they're wired. Some people work best from intuition. My request of you personally Take ownership of your charisma. How old are you now?
48.
Right. You're at your peak for this sort of thing. What if you have secret superpowers that you never realized? That the things that you're doing now are the things that everybody needs badly. For someone to say, I think it'd be a great idea if dot, 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 and other people say, you know, that's a good idea. You know, and he says, well, how about we just give it a try? I like to make executive decisions. It's important to split the difference and say, okay, I'll take responsibility. Let's try it this way. We need that if we're going to break through, if we're going to get past the old paradigms, if we're going to get out of the box and get outside into this huge infinity of possibility. That's what our group is about, where we just say, I will put this out there. Well, here's the thing. We take a lot of risks, and not all of them pay off. I'm the first person to admit that. Some of them come out really shitty. But we're swinging for the high fences, and that's what it takes. You find out what works in your community, what works in your tribe. Take some risks. If it doesn't work, you say, okay, no harm, no foul. Let's go to the next idea. And keep doing it, because that's how we got better. We didn't play it safe, not once. We're all over the fucking place. People come to me, and you know what they say? They say, I really think that this could be a good idea. I say, I empower you. What can I do to make that happen for you? I'm going to talk to you guys about V-cards. This is probably the most powerful tool we have. How many people here, show of hands, have heard of V-cards? Okay, virtual business cards. Those of you who have not heard of this, if you have an iPhone or an Android, you can actually say share contact. You know, you go to, let's say, my page, and then my page in the contacts, and I go to the bottom and I say share contact, and it says what, text message or phone? I say message. And then or email. And so then I say message. I type in, you know, the contact information for them. I send it, and it sends my picture, my phone number, my email address, all that stuff. So I don't have to tell them arduously to retype it. Well, that's really important, because if it's crowdsourced, if it's a swarm of information, then everybody, then I can say, you know, there's a guy that I think would really be good for you to talk to. I'll tell him that you're going to be contacting him. I call him, I say, okay, yeah. And I send him their contact information. They shake hands, and cooperation happens, and magic happens. The reason why this is important is because we can't wait for somebody at the top to tell us what needs to be done. Let's do it ourselves. What if we are the champions we were waiting for? All of us.
One of the things that I've noticed is that the Wednesday discussion meetings has been a fantastic resource for getting people with ideas together in a room. The ideas get hashed around, and all kinds of things are popping out as a result of that. I think the discussion meetings outside of a bar, no booze, it's just...
No loud music.
Yeah, it's just people can sit and talk and get to know each other. It's an idea fountain, and it's been a fantastic thing for what's going on in San Diego.
And nothing is more attractive to young guys than people validating their ideas, saying, that's a great idea. It never would have occurred to me. You know what I'd say to young guys? This is like a major, major attraction to young guys. I say, I got into the leather scene in 1977, so technically speaking, I am your past. I'm your history. I said, but if that's where I stopped, it would be a fucked up message, because the hidden communication is, I'm old guard and you never will be. That's the usual communication. The second half of the real communication is, and you are our future, and you're more important than I am, because my ideas are good, my ideas are old. We need new energy, we need new idealism, we need new perspectives, because you have a different experience than I do that is a more modern perspective. If we stop treating you as good and honorable and respectable men, it says more about us than about you. And if we stop welcoming new people as a conscious process, all new people, all ages, all colors, all body styles, all experience levels, if we stop doing that, we're just a clique. And we may as well head off to the tar pits. Because here in town, admittedly, there's plenty of older guys, but look around this room. Let's look at who showed up. It's all of us. And there can be a lot more young guys in the mix, too, because they are here. They're not as visible, but they're here. How do I know? Because I was here last weekend, and they all came up to me and wanted to get fucked. Oh, my God, lots and lots of them. And it was very pleasant for an ego like mine. You know, it made Grandpa feel really good. But the point of the matter is that these young guys were there like, give me something to do. And that engine is what drives our group. Because the guys that are running our club are not the leaders of tomorrow. They're the leaders of right now. That they're getting so much approval from us older guys, so much affection, so much support, that they want to impress us. They want to impress us. They want to stand a little bit taller and puff their chests out a little bit more. They want to fit in. They want to know that they have a place in their in our history. They want to know that they're going to look this good when they get to be our age. They want to know that we didn't all die. And they want us. They do. They really want us. We have to want them too. And we can't treat them like something separate from us. They are not separate from us. Just no more than you personally, or you personally, or you personally were at that same age. You had pretty damn good opinion of yourself back then. And all these young guys who are tired of the shallowness, and tired of the bar chatter, and tired of the emptiness, what they're looking for is us. Like I said, it is my duty as one who had many mentors to turn around and help the next guys. And that's what I do. All that anger, all that rage, all that survivor's guilt in my heart from having lost over 140.
Jeff and I were just talking on the mini break, and what I propose, those of us that here that are interested, is we actually get together and start doing some brainstorming about what can we do? What can we do? And not like what I believe about brains. I can facilitate sessions because I have a lot of experience facilitating. What I believe about brainstorming is you throw spitballs at the wall.
Yep.
And nobody judges the spitballs. Nothing
yep.
gets judged. You just get as much on the wall as possible. And then you go, which ones do we want to attack first?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody documents all that, but then you go after that, and we decide which ones light us up the most. And we create that, and we start doing that, because Ken and John are all for us stepping forward
yep.
and helping. They just want to manage the website
yep.
and the email list.
Yep.
It'd be great to have somebody be an editor and create a once-a-week email
yep.
to go out to the group. They're too busy to probably do that.
Yep.
If one of us can take that on and do that, they'll send it out. That's
yes, they will.
With the Pride thing.
Yep, and with my announcement for this.
I propose that we just get together and start doing some brainstorming. So that's all I wanted to put out there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Do it.
And
this,
and the point I want to add. This
have
is not
fun
a,
doing it.
Yeah, this is not a one-time thing as far as I'm concerned. This doesn't stop today. I will continue to help you guys. You were asking, how do we do that web page where you can add people, boom, boom, boom? I will gladly make a copy for you and customize it for you. It's no big deal. All it does, when you click on the link for the web page, it loads up a PHP, you know, a little programming thing that you can edit very easily. And then all you have to do is set up which email it sends it to. When you type in the email and then maybe some notes, all it does is send me an email and says, here's some information. I can copy it and paste it. Yes, it's more work. It didn't automatically add them. But that helps me, actually. I get to see how many people are joining. I get to see if there's any comments. It's meant as a gift for me, as the guy who's in charge of that sort of stuff, to say, we gained a lot of new people from that particular event. And I just copy, paste, add them. I can only add 10 per day. And some days I have to put out a note saying, I'll add you in a few days. It's a busy weekend. It'll take a while. You know, that sort of stuff. But what a problem to have. And see, that's the thing, though, is that it's that easy to be able to have everyone with a smartphone who gives a damn, who has that fire in their belly saying, yes, I want better communities. There is nothing more effective than being able to say, oh, here, boy, I've got the people at Pleasures and Treasures. They've got the same thing. They can add people. I've got all the young studs in the group doing it. I've got all of my buddies doing it. Anybody who cares. And somebody says, God, I wish I knew what the hell was going on. Or here in San Diego, in Palm Springs during this weekend, there's a ton of San Diegans here who had no idea. And then I run into them and they say, well, I'm from San Diego. I say, really? Here. or if I don't have my phone with me, I grab his phone. Here. And it happens that fast. Because here's the thing, though. We lose maybe one per month. And usually with a note saying, I don't live in San Diego anymore. Good job. But I'm moved to New York. We don't lose them. It's called stickiness. They stay. Not because, you know, they're reading every word. Trust me, they aren't. When you see the link, the newsletter, why don't we start passing that around?
Okay.
Yeah. Everybody scroll up and down on that web page. You're going to be shocked. This is just for the next 30 days, this upcoming events thing. Yes?
One thing I want to say that I was really grateful you touched upon is you really examine the gay psychology,
mm-hmm.
and that's a really important thing. Having to do with touching,
down too.
You know,
yes.
How do we expand
mm-hmm.
the human touch?
Yes.
Which is important to us as humans. conference. In LA, people are great at putting together organizations and clubs and meetings and all of this, but the intimacy issue is what is what is missing, is what LA people have a big, big problem with.
Yeah.
You know, how to take that human touch and expand it, make it virtual and draw people in and get people to drop their fear of intimacy, drop their wall, and say, hey, let's socialize, let's meet new people, let's look at people outside of our so-called norms.
Yeah, and take the pressure off. Make it so that it doesn't have to be about a date. Take the pressure off. What happens is by taking the pressure off, people are getting laid incredibly amount, but from a different perspective, that they're actually getting to know each other before they hook up, rather than just like, oh, yeah, you look like the next number. You know, I mean, we've all done it. We know how to do that. But being able to actually get to know somebody through what they say, and they're so full of enthusiasm and so damn attractive, while they brag about all these great stuff, these things that they want to bring to the group and stuff, and you just say, oh, that's a stud, son of a bitch, I want some of that. But it's a different motivation than just, yeah, you'll do. You know, I know what you're looking for. I mean, one of the things that I say that resonates with people incredibly is I say, we're really tired of being judged by stupid stuff. You know, oh, I already know what you're about. I've looked at you. You know, how demeaning, how dehumanizing. What if there's somebody inside that is not being acknowledged and needs to be before he'll blossom? See, what in our group, what happens is it's called blossoming. Blossoming forth. Another way of mixing metaphors, it's like going from cocoon to butterfly. We have that a lot in our group because that's what we've created the space for, that you can be fully self-expressed. And as much, I mean, like, okay, what's your first name again?
Brett.
Right. What if you were Maximum Brett all the time? Because that's the way we like you. Where you go to, like, think of a diving board. Kapunk, kapunk, kapunk. Only instead of going downward, you go poink up to a new level, and you never go back because you don't have to. Because you've got a support system. You've got people that believe in you. You have a basis for trust in your life. In order for us to get to that point, you guys have ever heard of Maslow's hierarchy of needs? You know, if you've taken college courses, it's like a pyramid. Down at the bottom of the pyramid is the basic stuff we need to survive, like oxygen, water, sleep, stuff like that, food. Well, then, as you go higher and higher up, then you get more and more of your needs, but you get more esoteric as far as what those needs are. At the tip, and I think, is self-actualization, where you are totally satisfied with how your life is. Nothing throws you anymore. You don't take anything personally anymore. But the characteristic of being at the tip of the pyramid is reaching back and helping people get to that point. But what you're standing on the top of that pyramid, is a social structure that works. People that love you for who you are. You can't jump several levels to get there. You have to start here before you can get to here. That's what we're really talking about, creating a support system where suddenly there's little explosions of extraordinariness. Explosions. And it gets faster and faster and more current. I mean, more often, because everybody feels safe. That everybody feels like they're getting their basic needs handled. So that everybody is able to be Maximum Brett and Maximum Ray and Maximum Bob, because that's who are they born to be. It's your birthright. But if we're constantly worried whether or not we're going to fit into the A-list or be attractive to other men, we're never going to get to that point because we're stuck over here in the side corner instead of moving our way up the mountain. Mixing metaphors, but you get the point. But see, that's really what our group is about, and that's what keeps happening. Last night, how many people were at the dinner, the official dinner? Something you may not have noticed, but this was brought to my attention by multiple people. The table in the center of the room was a long table, and it was the table everybody wanted to be in on. Why? Because it was full of San Diego's young studs. Mr. San Diego Leather, Mr. San Diego Eagle, various other guys who, you know, started being rising stars in the community, and everybody wanted to just focus on them. What happened a few months back? Before he even won the Mr. San Diego Leather contest, Aaron, who's my leather son, he got an invitation from California B&B Corp. to have dinner with him up in Long Beach. Sure, fine. So he came up expecting dinner. He didn't realize he was dinner. in the sense that every one of these guys, he was the youngest guy there by 16 years, everyone turned around, poof, and focused on him. And they spent 2.5 hours grilling him, saying, how are you guys doing it? You guys are so successful with the young guys. We need that too. How do you do it? So then every time he came to a point where he wasn't quite sure what to say, he would think, what would Papa Tony say? I didn't mind hearing that. But I had been filling up his ears so much with this philosophical stuff for months that he had ready answers for these things. And what happened is that he came back the next day, and he was in ecstasies of joy. They were treating him so respectfully and as a wise young man, as someone with worth, someone with value, as someone with the reputation that precedes him. This is something that honestly was all of our birthright. But somehow or another, that never happened. We didn't do that for each other. Let's do that now. That we treasure that about each other, that we give each other the opportunity to be that extraordinary. What happened is that he came back Monday morning, the next morning, Monday morning. He had to, it was his deadline for sending in his application for running for Mr. San Diego Leather. I admitted I helped him, but I said, pay attention. This is your breakthrough in your life. You have a talent for bridging the gap between the generations. Put that in the application. So then he filled in his application. He sent it in. The people who were judging his application, who were reading it, told him after the contest, they said that they have judged many, many international contests, and they've never seen as good of an application, as good of a political platform as what he said about bridging the gap between the generations. When he did his 90-second speech in front of the crowd, all of the older guys were crying, tears running down their faces within 30 seconds, because what he said resonated in their hearts. It's time. And we're past time. We're way past time. We're overdue. We need each other. We need to be able to reach out. We need to be able to be loved for who we are, and we need to extend that to others. This is it. We can't wait any longer. The older guys are dying. When they're gone, the treasure is lost. This is a treasure hunt in both directions. We've got the older guys, some guy you walk past in the supermarket, you have no idea that he has been in a relationship for 48 years. Or that he is the king of single tailing, or that he's learned how to have a long-term mixed vanilla and straight, you know, vanilla and kinky relationship and have it work. But the moment you walk past him, that moment is lost. And we don't have enough reasons for the generations to meet. And see, we need those too. Not all of us are all that old. We need to have some sense of continuity too. But in order for us to have it, we have to extend it. And that's what this group can be about. That's what I assert. That all it takes is having an email that goes out each week saying, the big party is coming up in a few months. You know, put that on your calendar. This is the newest news about the Halloween thing that's coming up. Because somebody was saying over breakfast, nobody knows when the Halloween stuff is happening in Palm Springs. Put it in the newsletter. Suddenly, everyone goes, boom, and focuses on that newsletter. They'll recommend it to their friends, and suddenly 3,500 people. You go, where the fuck they all come from? Not all of my 3,500 people are in San Diego. A lot of them are out of town. But it's about 90% of people are in San Diego. But what's interesting, what I didn't understand, what I didn't expect, is I had to let go of my bigotry. I had to let go of my attitude that these young guys aren't interested. Because I bet you $5,000, really, that I can walk into any bar, any Twinkie bar, standing model bar, you know, oh, we're so contemptuous of them, they're so different from us. And I can go in there in full gear, and I'm a 6'5", 280-pound monster of a man with a daddy belly and a big old gray beard, and I look about 9 foot tall and about 6 foot wide, and I can come out of there with 40 emails of people saying, please, oh God, get me on the list. Why? Because what we represent is continuity, mentoring between the generations, where we take responsibility for each other's well-being. That is our history. That is our tradition. We don't have that in most parts. I mean, they do have that in the house history of the imperial court. You know, and you're in that house, it's like a fraternity. Well, we've had so many decades of history before we started dying so much of where we took care of each other, where we made sure that the young guys got the extra nourishment that they needed to rise in the community and gain credibility, to earn their leathers, to do all these other things. When these young guys find out that we're there and that we care about them and that we're not going to leap upon them and then throw them away like used toilet paper. They stay. And I promise you, these young guys, when they show up for these events, you know what they do? Like I said, they look through these pictures on here and they go, ooh, there's ooh, oh, there's Eli. Oh, yeah, I know him. And it adds verisimilitude. It adds credibility to what it is that we're doing. Because they say, well, he thinks he's great. Well, what I love is I'll talk to, let's say, five young guys, age 22 through 26. There's five of them. They're a protective little cluster of guys, and they're in a leather bar for the first time, but they're intrigued. And I'll come up and I'll talk to them, and at first they're like, what kind of drugs is he selling? You know, because they, you know, they're on their best, you know, they're on normal healthy self-protective behaviors. But when some young guy goes cruising past, I say, excuse me, and he stops, and I said, you're on my email list, aren't you? And he said, yeah. He says, is it a good email list? Oh, fuck yeah. I said, I'm a nice guy, right? Oh, yeah, you're the best. And he moves on. Well, the young guys go, didn't expect that. That they suddenly see me differently. They see, since I'm not all hands and glands with them, they see me as somebody who may be that kind uncle who actually might be able to answer their questions, who might actually give them a leg into a community that might be better than what they've been suffering through. That what if there's been bigotry on both sides? And it's the easiest thing in the world to get rid of once we acknowledge it and recognize it. That my bigotry was, well, they won't be interested in me. They'll think I'm an old troll. That I'm this hideous thing that wants to, you know, whip them bloody and, you know, leave them in the hospital for 3 weeks. You know, the stereotypes. There's a lot of bad people out there, and they're all online. What we do instead is we create a separate support group that operates in the daylight. Because the bad people operate under the cover of darkness. But we're honorable. We base our relationship upon esteem, upon credibility that we've earned the hard way. Credibility never takes a day off. We have to earn it every day. But if we do that, if we keep our word, if we follow through, if we renegotiate, if we can't make it on time, it's still part of the same being honorable. If we make sure that not just me getting all my goodies, but I make sure everybody else gets some too, that's mutual cooperation. That's the golden rule. And these young guys, they find that highly attractive. And what they do is they show up and they work their asses off. And that's the engine that drives it. Because their innovations, their energies, their ideas, they are the lifeblood of our group. That right now what you're doing, right now, what I assert, is you are being the wise men of this community. All of us, all ages, all of us. And that this will be incredibly attractive to the younger guys. Set that as a goal. That you treat them, not just the first words out of your fucking mouth, do not say, ooh, nice ass. Because that just feeds the stereotypes. You treat them courteously, and they find it so seductive. Oh, my God. But I'm just saying, for what it's worth, that by coming at them from a different direction, based on the assumption that this is your younger brother that you love dearly and want to see survive and thrive and actually explode into gloriousness, if you come at them with that viewpoint, they're going to show up and they're going to stay. Being rejected by the elders of our community is no different than being rejected by your own genetic father. I'm frustrated a lot with older guys because I beg them, I say, please be visible. Just show up. We don't want you to work. Just share a little bit of wisdom every once in a while. You know, be a good man of the community. Be around. We want you to be part of the tribe. And they look at me and they blink and they smile and then I never see them again. I've had years of that and I'm really up to here with it. So I tend to get angry sometimes. And see, what we have to do is we have to keep trying. We have to keep approaching. We have to keep breaking through. It's something that's like chipping away, you know, in order to get through. But the reason, the payoff is that maybe one guy, like the guy that I met at the dinner last night, he's been in the group only 6 months in PSLOD, and he was as open to this idea as possible. That can be the breakthrough. Also, Drew came and supported you guys, and he's with PSLOD. That with those ways, with these little inroads, then maybe new breakthroughs can happen. We can do fine without them, but there's a treasure over there. Just like there's a treasure over here. It's a treasure hunt in both directions.
They'll eventually come.
And they may not, but we can't live for that day. All we can do is give the invitations.
And I'll invite them again next year.
Absolutely.
And I'll just keep inviting them.
Absolutely. You know, there's been a place at the table at the family reunion for Kinky Grandpa for a long time, and that chair has been empty for too long. We need all of us. All of us. Even if not everybody's on the same wavelength, what if he had that guy who disagrees with me, who really would just as soon spit on me as look at me, actually is a really good mentor for some of the younger guys in the group? That's okay. That's not the cost of my friendship. I'm not going to discourage him. I'm not going to say, you know, be gone, unclean one. The reason why is because whether somebody agrees with me or not is not the cost of my friendship and my understanding and respect of that person. It's okay. I'm kind of a unique character. You know, not everybody's going to like what I have to say. Not everybody's going to be on the same level. I mean, sometimes we'll talk past each other. That's okay. It's how people are wired. Some of us are just that way. We have different personality types. Mine is kind of freaky. I have the ability to establish commonality with anyone at any time, instantly. That's how I can get 35 guys on there, 3,500 guys on there, almost all of them one at a time. That's a lot of work. I'm a little weird. But the reason why I do it is because I have that fire in my belly that makes me want to keep reaching out, to keep bringing people in, because I'm open to the possibility that breakthroughs can happen. I'm going to tell a funny little parable. Years ago, I was president of the Chrysler Club. And did I talk about Chrysler products, old cars? And I was at the park hosting a minor league car show. And I got there early and I put out orange cones so everybody could park together, and I brought the barbecue and other people brought the cooler, and pretty soon people are arriving and I'm running around like an idiot. Oh, no, park over here with us. Okay, that's fine. Yeah, right over here, you know, that sort of stuff. Well, everybody's getting the barbecue warmed up. Well, then this brown 67 Plymouth station wagon pulls into the parking lot and veers off into the other direction. I go running after him. Wait. You know, and he rolls down his window. I say, aren't you coming here for the event? Yeah. I said, get your ass over there. No, I couldn't. It's just an old Plymouth station wagon. I said, dude, pop your hood. So he pops the hood, and I'm giving him a tour of the car. I'm saying, oh, I notice you got this, and I love this, and I see what you're doing with this, and I notice, you know. And so I'm giving him a tour of his own car, just establishing, you know, I know what I'm talking about and that I'm on the same wavelength. And I also mentioned that I work on my own cars, too, and I showed him my bloody knuckles from with the torque wrench going wrong and the dirt and grease under the fingernails. And so I said, come be with us. And so he showed up, and he had a good time. Well, during the years that I was running the car club, I assert it was the golden age. I ran the club for 10 years, and then I retired. He took over after me, and it became twice as good. But if I had shunned him, like the previous two clubs had shunned him, as one unclean, as one who is not of us and shall never be, then I would have completely broken the possibility that that man could have done a much better job than me. And that's what we have to be open to. We have to have an active and conscious mechanism for bringing in new people constantly. Because as I said, we live in a distractible age. Not everybody can come to every event. Some people, if you look at all of our group pictures that are on here, there's not a lot of overlap from picture to picture to picture. Some people come when they can. Some people come when they want. Some people don't. Some people are out of town. Some people move away, whatever. We're a very transitory culture. But when people show up, the thing that they can count on is that they will land on soft cushions and not broken glass, that no one will treat them shabbily, that they will be joyful and glad that they showed up, and that they'll get something from it that they wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And that's what the philosophy of our club is. And that's why we always reach out to the new people, because they are the future of our club. That's why we don't stop at a certain point. That's why I didn't stop at 2,000. That's why I didn't stop at 150. Because we're different. We're not the usual paradigm. We're not the old bylaws, meetings, all that, you know, all that official crap. We're doing it entirely organically. Think of this as an organism that starts small and then gets bigger, and then gets bigger. But everybody's growing in the same direction. We're not growing apart, because everybody's staying in through communication through the emailed newsletter that comes out each week. So we're aligned. So that if somebody has something they want to share, saying, oh, by the way, I'm hosting a benefit bike ride for Leatherman, you know, coming up this, whatever. If you think that's a good thing to put in the newsletter, put it in the newsletter. For God's sake. It's something that adds value to everybody. They say, you know, my demographic would really like this. If it's going to be 15 different drag shows, chances are very good the Leathermen are not going to be looking for that. So just be really clear that you don't want the email list to be a dumping ground for any old damn thing, because people get tired of it. I'm also not real fond of constantly pushing fundraisers. Fundraisers are valuable. They're wonderful. But if on the email list, if people see nothing but fundraiser of appeals, then all they see is these people just see me as a walking wallet, and they will turn off. You have to be aware of that. What you're really looking for is to entice, to seduce people into getting away from their computers and getting into the non-virtual world. In order to do that, you have to make it as enticing as possible. You have to make it dependable, where people rejoice when it comes, you know, through their window, you know, and lands quivering on the floor, the new newsletter. Ooh, I like what happens. See, what I do with my newsletter is I email a short version of it, plain text, but with a link to the full version. So then they go through it and they, oh, I better find out more about that. They click on the link, and then they go to the link, and they learn deep information about it. But at least I give them the choice of choosing whether they want to read it or not, because if I just send them this monstrous newsletter every damn week, it makes them crazy, and they won't read it. They'll tune it out. So you have to balance that. I would gladly coach whoever does the newsletter. This is how it works. But the advantage of this, again, the payoff, is unity, because everyone arrives on the same wavelength. Everyone arrives with the same energy that you guys have, and every event ends like that break was ending, with everybody happy, chattering. What I love to do, okay, remember the energy in the room, okay? We'll be doing it again shortly. Listen. What I tell the new people, I say, listen to the energy in this room. What do they sound like? They say, God, they sound so happy. I say, yeah. You know how long we've been doing these men's discussions? 10 months. They go, huh! Because they didn't expect that. They did. They go, really? Looks like they've known each other like 20 years. Because we have such a basis for trust, we can drop the shields quickly. So we don't have to constantly chip away at the ice until we get through to somebody. You'd think, with all the cynicism we have in our culture, you would think, with all the reasons, the very logical reasons for why we should stop trusting each other, that it would take dynamite and diamond drills to get through people's cynicism. You know what it takes? A touch. That's all it takes. The touch says, I like you. See, my words are on one level, but my touch is on a personal level. It says, I like you. If I'm standing 4 feet away from him with my arms crossed and yelling at him, you know, yelling towards him, it's a different communication. But if I'm warm and I'm quiet and I'm touching, not as in baby, baby, but as in, this is the approval daddy touch. I've got my hand on the back of somebody's neck. They didn't ask me to. They've never met me before. A little bit of me goes a long way, and there's a lot of me. And yet I'm still approaching them. I'm still inside their space. I can't claim that they're attracted to me sexually. You know, I'm a very narrow focus for a lot of guys. But yet they still show up for our events because I broke through. I had to cry at one of our recent men's discussions. I asked everybody, how did you find out about this? And over again, each person said, Papa Tony invited me. Papa Tony invited me. And I started crying. I said, this was like the nicest thing I could have ever known, that I have that kind of effect on people, because they were all glad. They had gladness in their hearts as a result of something that I had done. I'm going to tell you a story that's me bragging, okay? I got taken away from the San Diego Pride Festival in an ambulance. I hadn't taken good care of myself. I was taking care of everybody else. And I didn't get enough water, but especially did not get enough electrolytes. And my body just shut down. I gave a talk, and then I tottered over to a chair over in the volunteer section and started drooping. I got to lay down. So I laid down in the shade, and the sun was moving, and I was getting I was losing the shade. Well, like 200 people came running, because they heard the Papa Tony was not feeling good, and they came running, and they stood in rows to provide me with shade. And I'm laying there. I'm thinking, what if this is it? Because I didn't know what was going on. I was thinking, what if this is where it ends? And I thought, I could die happy right now, because I'm surrounded with love. And they're saying things to me that anyone would want to hear in their lives. And I think, I want this for everyone. I wish everyone in the world had this kind of experience in their life, to get that much love, and not when they're laying in their casket, when they can't appreciate it. I get it now. What could be better than that? But see, I don't want it to just be for me. I want it for every swinging dick in this room. That's what I'm dedicated to. It is our birthright. We've been isolated and vaporized as a community for too long. It's time for us to find each other again. It's time to gather the tribe. It's time for all of us to just let go of how things were. And again, go back to being happy three-year-olds in a mud puddle together, where you don't have these cynicisms, where you don't have these concerns and considerations and all these other things that just bind us up. that our events are joyous, because that's our birthright. It's what we wanted, but more than that, it's what we really deserve on a deep down level. What if there is worth in every one of us, and always was? What if the things that we've been holding back are the things that the world needs? So like I say, I know I'm starting to repeat myself, but you get the point, that I honor every one of you for being here. It's a statement of who you are as a man. Otherwise, why would you sit here and listen to me go on and on and on? Seriously, this says a lot about your endurance and your character, that you're here because of your basic worth and goodness. And I acknowledge that. And it's not something that's lightly said. It was there all along, and thank you for showing up. And guess what? You're going to attract a lot more people, because there's nothing sexier than a good man. There's nothing more attractive than men that you want to stand a little bit taller around, and you want to emulate them because they're damn good role models. And you think, you know, I'm not the only one. Maybe I can be like that guy when I get older. That's what these young guys say. And they're not staying off by themselves. They're in the mix. They're happy in the mix. They're not separate from. They're not protective, like, okay, I'll go, but just keep your creepy hands off me. We don't do that. So I'm going to tell you what happened at the last belt party. It happens every 3 months. And it was at a smaller venue. There was a lot of conflicting events. It was on a really shitty night because it was on the night when all the Halloween events were. And yet, it was exquisite. That is a word I would use, exquisite. Because these young guys, these young studs in our group, you know, 31 years old, 28 years old, they're on the job. They're learning all about rope bondage, the fancy stuff. They're learning all about flogging. I've given away 4 floggers in the last 2 months. That's a very expensive hobby, isn't it? But why did I do it? Because what I assert is one of the biggest needs we need, things we need in our community, is cocky tops. Okay, we think we'd have plenty of them. No. A lot of these men who have gone from wearing leather to living leather want to become really good tops, but they have no role models except porn. Porn is a shitty role model. They don't show preparation, cleaning up beforehand, the little Twinkie practicing with 10 different sizes of dildos until he can finally take that monster. All they show is people making faces at each other's private parts. Suddenly they're balls deep, and you wonder how the hell they got to that point. Okay, so it's a terrible role model. You try and do it in real life, it doesn't work. Okay, but I'm kind of missing my point. Hang on. So these young guys, they're excited. They want to learn about flogging. So what I would do is that I teach tops. I use this one right here as the study material, because this man has exquisite feedback. He gives better feedback than any human being I've ever met in my life after, you know, decades. And that's why I slapped a collar on him, because this is the best right here. But so then I have other tops. Learn on him, trying things, hot wax, bondage, electrical flogging, single tailing, cat of nine tails, paddling, all that stuff. And he's just all sorts of juicy good fun for those guys. And he has a good time too, I think. Yeah. Anyway, so then, but the point is that these young men, I would teach them how to flog, and then I would loan them one of my floggers. But then I would watch. I would see what they would do. I would say, this is how you practice. You take a pillow, and you put the pillowcase over the top of the door of the refrigerator, close it, and practice on the refrigerator, put on the headphones, listen to music, listen to an audiobook, take your brain away, and just go from side to side, go over here, go over there, keep doing it, and work on your aim and doing it effectively, bam, 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 bam. Then when you've done that, try it on some human beings, and then get back to me. Well, they do. They send me pictures from Folsom Street Fair with them flogging one guy after another in the pictures, and those guys are real gratified and happy. They report back to me. Then I say, okay, Tuesday morning, take the day off. Show up at my place 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning and bring the flogger. I don't say anything further than that. They come over. I grab the flogger. I say, assume the position. I flog the living fuck out of them. I use every technique I know, and I know a lot. I know like 18 different ways to throw a flogger. I'm a 10th degree black belt. But so then I use it on them thoroughly, do a full scene with them, and then I present it to him. I say, this is yours to keep. You've earned it. And immediately, he suddenly gains 5 inches in height. Because the guy who knows flogging better than anybody else in Southern California has now certified him. And he is now a man of the streets. And what happens? is that each time that that happens, the level of civilization rises in the world, and all the boys in town go, oh boy, oh boy, because cocky tops are what we need in this town. And what I'm doing is that I'm encouraging these young guys who want to get into rope bondage. And I downloaded 220 videos from twonaughtyboys.com, K-N-O-T-T-Y, they're downloadable, but they're not in a format that plays on an iPhone or an Android or an iPad, so I convert them, and then I give away discs, give away discs, give away discs. So they put them onto their phone, and they start playing it, and they try out the tying, and now that didn't work, and you back it up, oh, okay, and then do it over and over again. They don't have to master all of it, just master one. And then when we have the belt party, then he shows up and he does the dragonfly, whatever the hell it is, on this guy, then this guy, and that guy. And those guys couldn't be more proud. And those guys that are tight, they go, look at this fucker, I got it, and you don't. And it becomes the new fashion. And these young studs are the style. And they're setting the tone. And now they're saying, we want to learn single tailing. And we've already got a whole lineup of them ready to learn single tailing out at the park. We're going to practice with whips. You know, cracking the whip on different leaves on the bushes and stuff like that, because we've got an old straight guy that loves teaching young whippersnappers. I had to say that. So that they are able to master it. And each time this happens, the level of civilization rises. Because if they wait for the old guys to show them, they're going to have to wait forever. Again, we crowdsource wisdom, because these young guys come back and I say, well, we did during our flogging workshop when I was talking about that. Is that when I said, bottoms over here, I spoke to the guys that I had given the whips to and that had earned them. I said, okay, head on over to the bottoms and you take care of them. Because I trusted them. I didn't have to care. I'd already signed off on them. I knew what they were capable of. I didn't have to worry. I didn't have to watch over, wait a second, because they're done. And they knew that. And I made sure they knew that, too, afterwards. And they just, oh, they puffed out even more. But the new guys that I'm teaching, it's like their lives depend on it. They want to learn. Dad's finally teaching me. Thank God. And that's how our tribe is getting more and more cocky. We're getting more and more of these wonderful young studs. And what happens is when, like, how old are you?
45.
Right. Okay, let's actually go around the room. 57 next month. Yeah, go ahead.
55. 50. 48. 50. 49. 55.
Mm-hmm.
54. 45.
Mm-hmm.
48.
Mm-hmm.
27.
Mm-hmm.
My next birthday
I'll be 70. Good for you. Yeah. I honor you for being here. Say it again.
28.
Right. Welcome to the two men who are here for the exact same fucking reason. That's what I assert. That yes, there's things that you need to learn, but there's things you can learn from him too. He brings his own special magic to this group, just by his presence, just by his questions, just by his interest.
I've waited.
Yeah. There is treasure on both sides of the divide.
50 years for this group.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, like I said, this is your birthright. So take ownership of it. It's not hard. It's not a lot of work. You think, oh my God, it must be a lot of work. The only thing, I will reassert what I said before, is the power of your own good word. That's all it takes. That's all I do with my newsletter. I say, this is going to happen. This is what you can expect. And everyone shows up saying, I endorse this dream, and I will make sure that it happens. And nothing bad happens. Because we keep attracting good, admirable, kinky motherfuckers. Because these ages that I'm hearing through the room here, you guys are at your peak. The things that you know, the things that you've gained the hard way, guess what? This is where it starts getting really good. That's why I'm here to encourage you guys. That's why I'm here to make sure that anything I can do, you can count on me. That will not stop. So, gentlemen, thank you. All right.